folks. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and every Thursday we release these special episodes where we look back at content from the earlier years of the podcast. This week, it's the Best of Sex Stories number 3. In a little bit, we're going to hear from Andrea Allen with a story that she first shared on the podcast in February of 2015. But first, a story from Mauro Montoya, who passed away this year. Mauro was a prominent LGBTQ rights attorney. He was among the first in the nation to represent people with HIV facing discrimination. And we're honored to have met him and to have had such a fun time with him at the Risk Live show at Pornotopia in Albuquerque in 2014. Now, on the episode he first appeared on, there were lots of jokes about penises the size of beer cans, and Mauro did us one better. So here he is now with a story we call A Can and a Half.
So this is a story about when reality intrudes on fantasy. Dun, dun, dun. And so this starts shortly after college when I did the thing that we all do after college, and I moved to a really tiny village in the Alaskan bush. And I mean tiny village. There were 700 year-round residents, and it was just below the Arctic Circle. There were no roads to this place. Everything was flown in or out, or, you know, 10-hour snowmobile ride. But there was one bar there overlooking the Yukon River, and I spent a lot of my weekends there during the 3 years that I lived there. And on one particular Friday night in my second year there, I went to the bar with my friend Kevin, different Kevin, and there was a beautiful woman at the bar that I had never seen in the village before, which was a very rare occurrence in a village of 700 people. And she was strikingly beautiful, and I'm talking about, she was not trying either. And when I first saw her across the bar, she was sitting on a duct tape bar stool in this falling down bar, and she was wearing just a dark tracksuit and no makeup, no hair, zero effort whatsoever. But she had these dark eyes and a dark olive complexion, dark hair, and something about the eyes. I mean, I know it's kind of cliche, but they just totally drew me in. And it was almost like unfair. Like, these eyes were setting a trap or something. Like, they kind of hinted at something mischievous and a little naughty at the core of this person. Mm-hmm. So, we're introduced, and for our purposes, let's say her name is Lisa. And we get to talking, and Lisa's story is that she had grown up in this small village. She had moved to Anchorage, and she had become a stripper at a club there. And she was home for the weekend visiting family. When I heard that she was a stripper, I kind of did the involuntary sleazy guy thing, and I checked her out a little more thoroughly, and she was the complete package. I mean, she was beautiful, and I realized that she reminded me actually of a girl that I had gone to high school with who had gone on to become an exotic dancer and was definitely the subject of many of my kind of stereotypical aggressive woman fantasies. We're talking at the bar, her, my friend Kevin, and after a while she gets tired of the bar and wants to go back to my place and check it out. So something you should know about my place in the village is that it was definitely not a castle. It was actually a double-wide trailer next to the radio station where I worked. And this meant it was right in the middle of the village. And so we go back there, and we have a few drinks. Kevin, Lisa, myself, my 17-year-old roommate was also there. After a couple of drinks, Lisa just stops the conversation cold. Literally, she says, "You guys, stop it. You're boring me. Somebody needs to kiss me right now." And she looks directly at me. So this is bait I'm happy to take. And so I lean in and I kind of give her kind of a pathetic fifth grade peck on the lips. And my friends are on the couch behind us just giggling, and she reacts by slapping me right across the face. But not for the reason I thought. She says, "You can do better than that. You need to be more aggressive. I need it more violent." So I'm a little disconcerted, but I go in, and this time it's like a ninth grade style, like sloppy, open mouth, just pathetic. And I'm kissing her, and as I'm doing this, behind her head, I'm motioning to my friends on the couch the universal sign for get the fuck out of here. And so they oblige, and they go out the front door, and we're able to start making out, and it's fantastic. This is like my fantasy from high school, and I feel like I'm like James Dean. I'm like the porn star who gets to be with the girls that most other guys, who are usually me, are just jacking off to in the parking lot. But it doesn't last for long, because my roommate comes bounding back in the front door, and he says, Eric, the fucking cops are outside. And so I'm like, what the fuck? And I go and I look out the door, and sure enough, the lone police car and the lone cop in the village are parked across the street from my house, shining a spotlight onto the front window of my double-wide trailer, which is really fucking stupid because the window is completely iced over. No fucking light goes through that thing. And on top of it, like, I know the only cop in town. We're friendly. And so I say to Lisa, stay right where you are. Don't move. I'll go across the street and I'll deal with the cops. So I walk across the street to Police Chief Dan, and he rolls down his window, and I say, hey, Dan, what's going on? And I had just interviewed this guy on the radio the day before. And so Dan says, look, Mr. Mack, I'm very sorry. Don't mean to disturb you. We just had a report that there is a major cocaine dealer in town from Anchorage, and they were seen leaving the bar with you, according to the reports. So I say, well, look, there's clearly been some sort of misunderstanding. I mean, yeah, I was at the bar, but there was no talk of drugs. I didn't see any drugs, which is true. And so we chat a little bit, and he seems satisfied, and he drives off. My roommate and my friend also make themselves scarce, so I go back in the trailer to continue my conquest. And when I go inside, Lisa's not in the living room. She's standing instead in the bathroom with the door open, and she's staring at herself in the mirror and just kind of giggling. And I'm looking at her, and then I realize that all over the sink and on the floor, cocaine is spilled all over the place. But before I can start to freak out about the cops, Lisa grabs me, and she shoves her hand down the front of my pants, and she grabs my cock and just squeezes. And the resulting erection was something like a phallic sword, at least one soda can tall. They have those little cans now. But it is a phallic sword, and it is slicing through the red flags that are flapping like crazy in my head. And so my hard-on vanquishes all my worries about the clear, reckless behavior of the woman in my trailer and the impending DEA SWAT team that may be surrounding my house at the very moment. So now, the transition to the bedroom wasn't quite the passionate clothes-tearing session that you might imagine. It was a little more like being led by my cock to my own bed, like a dog on a leash. But I decided to roll with it and take the chivalrous approach. And so, we get to the bed, I take off her pants, and I start to go down on her. But I don't get very far because she grabs me by the back of the neck, which is weird, like a puppy, and she says, did you brush your teeth? And I don't really get the joke, but I kind of laugh and just go back to what I was doing. She grabs me again and says, no, I'm serious. You have to go brush your teeth and wash your hands right now. And I don't know if this is just the cocaine and the booze talking or what, but I want to humor her and I want to realize this childhood fantasy that seems to be playing out. And so I go and I have a little wash-up session in the bathroom, and I come back and I go back to work. And again, she says, well, just stop. Are you sure you washed your hands really well? And I'm getting a little irritated with the OCD session that's suddenly going on. And so I try to turn things more to my advantage, and I say, well, I tell you what, Lisa, why don't you come and take a shower with me, and you can scrub me down to your complete satisfaction. But it's not really that great of an offer because my shower is kind of disgusting. And the window in there is also frosted over, so it's not exactly that enticing. But the offer seems to disarm her a little bit. And she says, you know what, forget it. Just come here and let me fuck you. So I go to the bed, And as she's climbing on top of me, I mean, you can kind of feel her taking control of her own situation again. And looking back now, almost 12 years later, I mean, it seems clear that night that there were like two Lisas in my house. There was the coked up, drunk, kind of out of control, possibly addict. And then there was this persona that she would put on that, as long as she was in control, she could clearly keep her shit together. But as we start to go at it, it doesn't last long again, because I know that the real cool porn star move here would have been to say, hey, you know, how do you like that big dick? Or, you know, your pussy is so wet. But instead, I look her in her eyes and I say, you're so beautiful. And at this, she stops and she starts crying. And I think, okay, this is it. She's really coming down hard. And so we stop and you know, I ask her what's wrong. And she grabs her stomach and she says, I hate it. I hate it. I fucking hate it. I'm fat. I hate it so much. And she proceeds to tell me about how in the last year she's had a child and she's been having a really hard time losing the last bit of belly fat and starting to affect her at work. And she's insecure. And, you know, I try to console her and compliment her, and I say, you're absolutely crazy. Your body is amazing, and you're beautiful, and I'm not lying at all. I mean, this is a beautiful, voluptuous woman. There's just no doubt about it. And this is also the moment where I have to admit to myself, especially at the age I was, like, shit's getting a little too real for me right now. The woman on top of me is a mother of one, maybe more, might be dealing drugs in my town and might be wanted by the authorities outside my door. I decide to roll her over and to keep consoling her, and we go into a more gentle missionary position, and I'm giving her gentle kisses and I'm complimenting her, and I get the idea that what I should do is I should pull out, because I want the compliments that I'm giving her to land right. I don't want her to think that they're sincere, not that I'm complimenting her because I'm fucking her. So I start to pull out, and she won't let me. So there is just a complete turn on her face, and she leans forward and she grabs me by the ass and just holds me there. And I'm in like a mid-reverse thrust, and I'm just so confused, and she's no longer crying. I mean, she suddenly has this like dead glare in her eyes, and she looks at me and she says, I need to tell you a story. And I say, okay, what stories? And she tells me the story, and it's the story of the father of her child, and how they met. He was a married guy that she met at the club she works in Anchorage, and they went home together. They had unprotected sex, and she had lied to him about being on birth control, and she had the kid and is now basically living off blackmailing this guy to keep his secret from his wife. So I am just a total deer in the headlights at this moment, and really kind of focused on my cock, which is now halfway inside perhaps a drug-dealing sociopath and does not have a condom on it. And so I am starting to think about the flight schedule. And I'm starting to think, when is the next flight to Anchorage? And can we get on it? And is there enough time to get on that flight in order to get the Plan B pill? Or will it be too late? And I am just out of my mind. And then she lets go and she leans back on the bed and she says, I'm just fucking with you. She says to me, if you're not going to fuck me like a real man, I'm going to fuck with your head. And I am just like frozen in horror. And I'm thinking like, I need to get away from this one, but I don't even know what is real at this point. Like, I don't know if she gets off on just like fucking with people in the head, or if this is some like power play and she needs to get control of the situation back because I made her feel vulnerable, or am I part of some like insane conspiracy and 9 months from now I'm gonna get blackmailed into becoming a drug mule and running cocaine into my village? And all I can think about is, this is too much. Obviously, I have to get away. So I start picking up my clothes, and I start getting dressed, and I start handing her her clothes. And at this, she turns again and just starts bawling. And I think I just need to get this woman out of my house. But at the same time, there is a side of me that's feeling some compassion. This is a woman who's obviously has troubles. And I start thinking about the flight schedule again. And I start thinking, you know, we could get a flight to Anchorage. And then we could get a flight to the lower 48. And we could run away. And like she could get away from whatever shit is she's tied up with in Anchorage. Maybe we could take her kid with her. And I'm just thinking, in my very naive way, and somewhat fucking condescending now looking back, I'm thinking, like, maybe I can fix it. I think I can fix it. But then another voice in my head says, you fucking idiot. Not only is that incredibly condescending, but it's that attitude that makes you the perfect mark for a sociopath like this. And so I'm a little torn, and Lisa ends up kind of making my decision for me when she grabs my hands and places them on her oversized breasts, and we basically fall asleep spooning. About 5 a.m., we wake up not feeling good, but stone cold sober and just hungover. And Lisa's awake too, and at this point it's pretty easy to convince her to go outside for a smoke, and I walk her back to her brother's house in the village, and I never see her again. And it was about 3 months after that that I started dating the woman who would become my wife. I met her in the village too. And about 6 months after that, we became exclusive and we moved in together. We've been happily and, to be honest, somewhat easily monogamous for over 10 years now. And, you know, when I think about why it's been so relatively easy for me to be monogamous for many years, especially compared to friends I know who struggle with it, I mean, I think obviously first of how wonderful and beautiful and sexy and smart and how much my wife is my best friend. But I also think back to what I learned that night with the stripper in that village. And one of the things I think I learned is that, you know, fantasy sometimes is nothing more than a glossy facade, right? I mean, obviously that's kind of the point. But I also decided that I think that a fantasy can also be a long-term project, even a lifelong project. A fantasy can be something that you build up from a solid foundation. And we've been working on building one for almost 12 years now. And I can tell you that today, it's a fucking tower. Several centuries.
We'll be right back. We're back.
So I've been in New York City for about 8 years now. And around year seven, I gave up on love, essentially. I dated like every psychopath, musician, painter, artist, whatever the fuck New York had to offer. And I was like, you know what? I'm fucking done. Human love, I don't need it. Who fucking needs it? I don't need it. And it felt great, except for I started to get really fucking horny under, like week two, I was like, I still gotta fuck though. So I gotta figure that out. So luckily, Tinder had become available, and I was like, yes, this is the best. So it's a Friday night, and I'm sitting alone in my apartment, sober, just swiping like a maniac, being like, I gotta find something! Because I'm so horny, and I don't know if you ladies have seen what Tinder has to offer, but it's a lot of fucking weird dick pictures. And guys with sunglasses, it's just like, it's tough. It's a tough selection. But I swipe my way to this gothy dude. I don't know if you can tell, but I'm kind of into gothy people. It's my jams. And so I see this gothy guy. His name is Chris. He's 6'5". This is his Tinder description. into S&M. I'm like, okay, interesting. And he's got lots of pictures. He's got like the leather wristband and like, you know, the edgy like side shaven haircut. I'm like, all right, I can fucking do this. So I swipe right. It's a match. I'm like, nailed it. So I start talking to him and he's out drinking and I'm laying my best like, oh, come on over, Tinder moves. I don't know what those are, but just like, you down to fuck, bro, basically. So he's out drinking and I'm talking to him. I get his number. I send him a picture of my ass. I'm like, let's do this. So finally, he's like, I'm going to come over after I'm done at this bar. I'm like, okay, great. And he's out drinking and I'm like, I'm hosting a gentleman. I should, you know, get him some food or something. I don't know. I thought that would be cool somehow. So I go on Grubhub. And I live in Brooklyn, so there's like one good thing. And I order two burritos and a coffee for myself. Because I'm very tired. But I need to fuck, so this is happening. So I order my food, it comes, I like lay it out, and he's coming. So he shows up, I open the door, it's like, yes! Exactly what he said. He's super tall. He's kind of awkward. He's like got like the emo kind of foot thing. But like, it's, I'm like, yeah, nailed it. Yes. So I'm like, I don't know if you guys have ever just met someone and they're like, come over and fuck me. But the conversation is a little strained because you know nothing about them. So it's like, come on in. I got like a burrito here for you if you want it. And we're talking. He's drunk, very drunk. And he's telling me about his life. He's like, I grew up in Denver. I ran away from home. I started a punk band. And then a friend of mine killed someone. So then I went to London. And then I got married. I was a bike messenger. I used to kill neo-Nazis. And now I'm a filmmaker. And I'm like, I let a crazy person into my house. And he's eating a burrito. And I've agreed to have sex with him. And what the fuck? Oh, my God. Okay. But... but I'm kind of into it though, because I'm fucking crazy. So like, let's party, right? So we finish our Mexican dinner, and then we take it to the boudoir, which is actually just like a foot away from the kitchen because I live in a studio. So we make that weird transition from like eating to fucking, you know, and it's just like, oh, now we're gonna be sexy. And immediately, like, he's into S&M, and it's very clearly expressed because he is throwing me against shit. I'm breaking lamps with my foot. He's choking me out. I'm like, I kind of like that, but you might kill me. Oh, my God. And I'm like, this is crazy awesome. Because, like, whatever. I'm down to fuck. But in the middle of it, he just, like, flips me over. He's a lot taller than me. And he just starts jackhammer fucking me in the ass. Like... no lube, no finger, just straight up, bam, bam, bam. And I'm like, what the fuck, man? And I start to get this feeling in my stomach. Oh, you guys know where this is going, right? And I'm like, that burrito is really not sitting well. And I'm like, I don't know if you've had anal sex with strangers before, but some, you're like, I feel like I'm gonna shit maybe, but like I probably won't, right? Like I probably won't. But once you start shitting, by the way, it doesn't just like end quickly. I am shitting on this guy in like 60 seconds flat. It is flying around the room like some sort of exorcism. I'm like, ah, shit everywhere. It's on his hands, it's on the walls. He's like slipping on it. He pulls the condom off. It looks like fucking chocolate is just melted all over it. And I'm like, oh my God. And he's just like, okay. And we're just both like staring at each other like, what the fuck do we do now? And so he very calmly is like, maybe we take a shower? And I'm like, okay, yeah, that sounds good. Let's get the shit off ourselves. That's the next step in this equation. So we're showering together. And he's like, let's get it off here. It's on my back. What is it doing on my feet? And we clean up. And I change the sheets. I'm a host. I'm still gonna like let him stay over, right? I wouldn't kick him out. I just shit on him, you know. I gotta be hospitable. So he is He's passed out. He's also still drunk, so he passes out. And I'm laying next to him like, oh my God. And I'm like, I still could shit for like 6 hours straight. Like this is, I feel like my intestines have suffered a lot of damage and I can't just play this off. Like I gotta go to the bathroom. But I'm still embarrassed about the idea of him hearing me shitting, even though I just like shit all over him. So I turn the shower on. I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna take another shower in the middle of the night for no fucking reason. Even though you're asleep, but I'm doing this for myself because I'm a fucking lunatic. So I have the shower go, all the faucets are going, and I'm shitting, but it's like a shotgun type shit. It's just like, it's coming out so loudly and fast, and I can't control it. So I want to muffle the sound, and I heard, a friend of mine told me, she's like, if you're ever, you know, away for the weekend with your boyfriend, I'm like, no, but okay. She's like, if you're shitting, you take toilet paper and you muffle it up and you press it against your asshole, like when someone's playing trumpet, you know that like thing that they use to cover? You use a similar technique, but with your asshole, so it muffles the sound, right? It stops the air pressure from making a sound. So I'm like, I'm doing that. I'm wadding toilet paper, but the shit's coming out so quickly that I'm just shit, it's going over onto my hand. So I'm just shitting on my own hand and like letting it drop and then putting my hand in the sink and then shitting in my own hand. And it was like, it was honestly like 2.5-3 hours. It was like Hellraiser. I was like, I'm gonna be doing this forever. Like permanent damage has been done. I can't shit now without like my own hand there for safety. Like this is numb. So finally, I think I shit everything I ate for like last 6 months. It was just like clear fluid. And I was like, I'll put a diaper on and I'll go lay down next to my new boyfriend. And so I'm like laying next to him and the sun is rising and he kind of wakes up and he's like, hey, you. And I'm like, okay. And then... we start talking, and I'm like, oh, you're actually kind of a cool guy. And then a couple hours pass, we're like falling asleep, waking up, and then he's eventually is like, do you want to go get brunch? And I was like, yeah, I kind of fucking do. Since we just got so close as people, we just formed a friendship so deep, like we're blood brothers, shit, bro, I don't know. Like, it's real between the two of us. So we go and we get brunch, and we're like talking about serial killers and all this weird shit. I'm a weirdo, he's a weirdo. I'm having a fruit cup and like a glass of water because I, you know, need a little time. And he gets like a full English breakfast. He's really loving life. And then at the end of this, I'm like, you know what? I kind of dig you. And he's like, I kind of dig you. And we ended up dating for like 6 months after that. It was like when you're looking for love, it won't come for you, but boy meets girl, girl shits all over boy. They form a deep bond and they date for like 6 shitty months. So you know what? It was beautiful. It was a beautiful thing. It made me believe in love again. Thank you very much. I'm Andrew Allen.
This is Risk. This is The Runaways behind me now. And we just heard from Andrea Allen, who has a hilarious Instagram at AndreaComedy69. And if you've got a story about sex, pitch it to us at risk-show.com/submissions. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.